Madeline, you served as a lieutenant in the Army Nurse Corps at Brooke Army Medical Center, and that was in Vietnam?
No, it was not in Vietnam. I did not go to Vietnam. I received orders for Vietnam, but they were changed, and I ended up staying at Brooke Army Medical Center on the burn ward for my whole tour of duty.
Where in your career did you decide to join the Army, or did you train in the Army?
I did not train in the Army. I went to a three-year diploma nursing school. And I was pretty much apolitical at the time. I was very young, didn't read the newspaper very much, although I was aware of what was going on around me. I worked 1 year in an emergency department. I don't know. There were some women that I knew, nurses who had gone into Army Nurse Corps, and I wanted to just get away from home, I think. But I had this desire to do something very meaningful as a nurse. So I joined. I had never flown before. I drove out to Texas, which is where Brooke Army Medical Center is, went on to the burn ward, had no training at all in burn nursing at all. We had a wonderful, wonderful chief nurse there, Catherine Galloway. And she said to me, don't be afraid. Don't do anything you don't know how to do. Just ask questions.
Was there specific training for joining the Army Nurse Corps? You came out of emergency nursing, which I always thought of as pretty high-powered anyway.
Actually, there was 6 weeks of training that we had when all of us who entered, no matter what you were going to do. And, I mean, there was like one day when we had to, you know, put on our fatigues and go out to Camp Bullis, which was close to the hill country, I guess. We had MAP training. We got to shoot a gun once. You know, you went in for... put the earphones on, and that was your training in shooting a gun. I mean, you literally had to fire it once, and that was it. I'll never forget it as long as I live. And then we also had the gas training. They put us in one of the rooms where they had tear gas, and we had to learn how to put on. Basically, they just wanted nurses.
I was thinking about nurses who served in World War II. And they're relatively few now. There are some nurses from Korea, and then most of our generation who served in the nursing medical corps. And I was thinking about the thread of nursing writing, that it's always been a very slender thread. And I'm wondering, what was the moment that prompted you?
That's a very good question. I've always been a writer. I mean, even when I was in high school, I was always a good student, Catholic girl, went to Catholic schools and tried very hard. And the sisters, the good sisters of St. Francis were taught me in elementary school and high school. They just kind of knew what your family could do, could afford. Two of my aunts had been nurses, and I think they just kind of understood that, you know, Madeline was probably going to go to nursing school. And I didn't object, but I'd always written. I'd always liked writing, always. So when I came out of the Army, I had the GI Bill. So I began to take literature courses, and that's when I began to write. But all the time that I was at the burn ward, I was writing little poems here and there, nothing about my nursing experience there. I was writing poems about the Texas landscape, a whole lot of nature poems, you know, very careful sonnets. And I think it really wasn't until much later when I realized that I had a story that I was compelled to tell. I mean, I really was compelled to tell it. And I think when I was on the burn ward, I was doing a job. I don't want to say I was closed off from feeling, because I did feel. And I think that has a whole lot to do with the point of view of this novel. It is not the point of view of the nurse.
I'm speaking with Madeline Misko, and we're talking about her book, Bringing Vincent Home. It's a story of a mother who is called, and her son has been brought back from Vietnam and goes on to this particular hospital. And as you say, you're writing it from the mother's point of view, and it takes place over, I think, about 3 weeks or so, which is the mother comes to visit. Somewhere, as a nurse, you were watching and seeing these families connect and or not connect, as the case may be. Those of us who nurse know that burn patients have a tremendous amount of pain, and that pain literally reverberates around the unit.
Well, I have to start out by being frank and saying my memories are not real clear, but there are certain things that I do remember. But I do know that I lost a lot of weight. I look at pictures of myself. I was very, very thin. We did eat our lunches, believe it or not, on the unit. I do remember that. I can remember being in that room with a brown bag, you know, lunch sort of. Our hours were, they were longer than the typical, like 7 to 3, 3 to 11. You worked till your work was done. We didn't have exact shifts, but our shifts weren't that long, maybe 9 hours, 10 hours. So it wasn't grueling long shifts. But there was screaming. There was a good deal of screaming, because anybody that's put into a Hubbard tank, and that was the type of care that was given then to debride you, these soldiers were put into a Hubbard tank. So there was a lot of screaming, and the unit was extremely small. So they were just off to another room. It wasn't like they went downstairs somewhere behind closed doors. So we were always, we were entirely aware of those things. But there was a lot of work to be done, and I was terrified the whole time I would do something wrong. There were nurses around me who were captains, and some of them had been to Vietnam. They were more or less the charge nurses, and I was more or less just taking my orders, do this, do this, do this. And you get through the day. So you're trying to do a good job, and you're so focused on these important things, especially the grafts, which were highly important. And you didn't want anything to go wrong.
We first met at the publication of a book called Between the Heartbeats, where Madeline had written a poem about the Vietnam Wall. And it was a very memorable moment for me, meeting you there and realizing your relationship to the wall and to the young men and women who had served in that war. The story, Bringing Vincent Home, talks about the mother's political awakening, and it also comes through her religion. Her religion is very, very important to her. Is this true for you too?
It is true for me. Bringing Vincent Home is, it's witness for me. It's truly witness. When I began to write more seriously, and my children were, I guess my youngest was about 4 when I realized that writing was important to me. At the time, I was not working as a nurse. I was a stay-at-home mother for a number of years. I had 4 children. Just about the time I would have gone back to nursing, maybe part-time, I began to realize I really wanted to write. Thinking about war and looking at my sons and thinking about conflict, and I suddenly began to think about what I had seen, and I began, this is going to sound dramatic, but I began to be ashamed that I had never written about it, not having told the story of what I had seen when I had the ability. Writing poetry, I was publishing a little bit here and there. And, you know, that usual frustration about not being published. And I was really thrilled when the Hudson Review published my first poem. It was a great moment for me. But that was like a parallel track. The other track was writing about what really matters. And I really hadn't started to think about that too much. And I did write that one poem, that poem about the wall. And that was a beginning moment when I suddenly looked at the body of my work and I thought, oh, there are no poems about that. And what does that mean? And that particular poem was noticed and received very well. And, you know, people were like, oh, you're a nurse poet. And I began to be sort of embarrassed in a way. Then I realized, but the real nurse story that I had to tell is the one about Brooke Army Medical Center. And I actually think at the time I was embarrassed that I had been sort of almost apolitical, staying home with my children. But it was an empowerment, too. It added to my voice. It gave me a lot more power than I realized. And when I began to write the novel, my fear was I don't remember anything. I was in the writing seminars. I was teaching at the time, actually. I had written that poem, that one poem, nothing else. And this other writer, John Sasser, who was in my fiction group, had been to Vietnam. He served in Vietnam and had gone back over there to look and see the place. He brought back a stack of photographs. And in the stack of photographs of him in contemporary times being there was this one photograph of him when he served over there. And I looked at it, you know, this blonde-haired boy, which I recognized as my dear friend, and I began to cry. You know, I just got all teared up and choked up. And I said, you're a boy. You're just a boy. And he said, yeah, we all were young. He said, what's the matter, Madeline? I said, it's just that I know now how young they were. That was it. I had this, I gotta do it thing. And I began to think about how I had to do it. So I went straight to see Dr. Andrew Munster. Now, Dr. Munster was Major Munster, when I was at Brooke Army Medical Center. He was one of the surgeons there. Andrew Munster set up a wonderful burn center in Baltimore. So I called and made an appointment with him. He made time for me, and I came into his office. It was about the size of this office, very small, very modest for such an important person. And he was so delighted that I was going to write this book. And he had just written a book, actually a book for families, to help families cope. So anyway, he was just delighted to help me. And I said, I don't remember anything. I don't think I can do this. I said, will you help me by helping me with the facts and the details? Because my memory is so poor for a writer. And he looked me in the eye and he said, don't try to write that kind of book. He said, don't go out and research it. Don't waste your time. You'll write a much better book if you make it up and try to remember. Just try to remember. And then afterwards, we can check over it and see if you've got it right. At the time, I was thinking I was going to use the nurse's point of view. But I no sooner sat down to start than it was the mother's point of view. I mean, it was...
Yeah, well, she's a wonderful character. She's really beautiful. It's wonderful to hear that story about your Dr. Munster, because it immediately makes me think of Dr. McDonald, I think his name was, who, when the young men were being shot down in the Second World War, would get burnt on their hands and faces. And a lot of the very early burn work was done from his work in relationship to the young fighter pilots. And it was a experience that came out of war. One of the things you've just talked about was the age of looking at those young men and seeing how young they were, not, of course, realizing how young also so many of the nurses and physicians were who were also taking care of those patients. And in a recent conversation with Mark Danner, who is a political journalist, he talks about there is no accident that young men are sent to war. Madeleine Misko is my guest today, and we're talking about her book, Bringing Vincent Home. At some point, Kitty begins to become aware of war as the issue itself. Can you see that you ever saw that in any of the families that came to visit the hospital? Were you ever conscious of their mixed emotions?
Well, this is where it's truly fiction. Since I've written about this, I have met some Vietnam veterans who were either on the burn ward or knew of people, and I asked them, I said, well, did families, were they there? And they said, yes, they were there. But I have to confess that I don't remember that much about them. I guess I was so focused on my work.
Think about it in relationship also to your age and where one was as a young woman nurse. We didn't pay a lot of attention to the family. The patient was the focus, mm-hmm. and the work that had to go around that. And I don't think that is just explicitly to an army hospital. I think of young women nurses and being really unaware of many things in many, many levels. You bring in Vincent's young sister, who is the wild child, and there's a wonderful line. The daughter is harassing her mother, and then the mother says, "We just aren't like that." Does that come into your, is it come in from your fiction, from your hindsight, or from your awareness at that time?
Well, it really is an awareness of my own family. Our family did not do things like that.
I want to bring this forward, Madeleine, because this is, I think, one of the reasons that this book, Bringing Vincent Home, really struck such a chord, was here we go again. Here we are again in the second round of this particular war with Iraq. And what is your connection with the young soldiers and the young nurses even who are taking care of the young men and women coming back today?
Well, I have recently become interested in the anti-war movement. So I recently am beginning to go to, you know, to marches, things like that. I have done some readings for, you know, Poets Against the War, things like that. I have not spoken at all, really, to nurses. I do have a daughter who is very much a Mary Kate. I have a cousin who works at a shelter in Baltimore. I mean, he's the director of the shelter in Baltimore. And just as a side thing, we went down there for one of these suppers that they had, and we took suppers and we sat at the table with these wonderful men who are recovering addicts. And I was trying to learn about them. And everyone who's there is working very hard. But come to find out, I forget the percentage. I don't want to say it on air, but it's a very high percentage. It's 90-something percent of them are veterans. So my question is, well, they're not in the VA system? Well, they could be, but they're getting better. The program is better here. They do better here. And, the VA cannot give them what they need. And we're not talking about people who were sergeants, in there for a long time, but they have addiction problems. They have post-traumatic stress syndrome. They have all sorts of things that are not recognized. They need care for their mental health, and they're not getting it. And they're struggling. And that high a number of them were veterans shocked me. I mean, really just shocked me. And most of them you see on the street,
Also, the amount of suicide that goes on among Vietnam vets is hard. And you touch upon that in Bringing Vincent Home. You do give us an example of that. You also have this marriage between a soldier who has come out of the war and a nurse. How much more empathetic or able to understand the soldiers, the warriors, were the nurses than maybe the general population? I mean, you give a quite clear two love affairs that go on in this story where one can handle it and the other can't. Is that something that you think is a reality, or is that something that just came with the writing?
I mean, I know of stories of nurses who really thought that they would be able to heal those that they had either married or had relationships with who came back, and were quite mistaken. There were a lot of young marriages that were pretty crippled early on by pathology that came out of the war. I didn't know them personally, but I knew of them, certainly. There are stories out there that you can read now, written by nurses who had those marriages early on. I knew of a suicide when I was there.
I have a young friend who was crippled in peacetime, but he was in the military. And he is also a writer. He's a quadriplegic and a writer. And he writes about and he talks about how freely the paraplegics can do it, but the quads can't. The quads cannot. They want to commit suicide, but they can't do it. There's another sentence here or phrase rather, that I remember hearing, and I don't hear it so much now, and I wonder if it's still deep in South Texas. My country, right or wrong. I think about that as a phrase of the times.
I do remember that from that period, that my country, right or wrong. I remember it because it comes up now. And I think I tried hard, I'm not sure I accomplished it, to explain that feeling in the novel, but it has to be your country is right, because everything falls apart. It's not like, my country, right or wrong, because we're great and, United States is great, but just that deep in your heart, you just have to believe in the way that a woman of her time would, that your country is good. It's a good country, and of course it's right. But it's not until after you're in the middle of it you suddenly realize, oh, that means my son goes, and I haven't thought about it.
It's a key point in the history of America, isn't it, too? Because the Second World War was the last just war. Then came Vietnam, where we had this question, and people in America don't necessarily believe that their country is right, and that is producing such deep inner turmoil.
Within my own family, and I'm sure it's true of many families, there still is that rift. I mean, there still are families, branches of the family that have a hard time dealing with, it's my country and my country is going to take care of me and it's a good country. It's my family. It's country as family, the American family as the, that whole thing becomes dismantled when you can no longer trust that your leaders are, making the good, right decision, and you go with it, and that you actually have to ask questions. And it didn't come naturally to her to question her faith. It didn't come naturally to question the country. But when it hits close to home and your child is hurt, then I think is when poor Kitty had to learn, you know, learn her lessons. I think she still stays very much within that family, though. She's not going to let the family go.
I don't want to give too much away of the story of Bringing Vincent Home, which is a short and beautiful novel, which I really enjoyed so very, very much. You can order it at your local bookshop, or you can find it at plainviewpress.net. So it's available and out there. And thank you, Texas, for bringing this little book out. I'm always grateful for the little presses. Madeline, the book is out, and the book is your offering. The book is your witness to this period of time. As you bring your offering, as you bring your witness to us, the audience, and to the listener of all generations, what in particular do you want us, you hope that we ponder from reading this?
Well, I hope that a real voice is heard. I mean, I hope I have created a character who is real, because I think, I mean, you know, each day you go through and you think, you see the pictures on the TV of the dead, you know, the soldiers who are dead. And you keep thinking, how can this be that each day there are more and more? And how can it be that I'm going through my day doing my ordinary thing? And I think there are many people like me. We're just not making the changes that we need to make. And I think the reason that we are able to just keep on going and not make something happen to stop it is that we don't have that personal view of it. That real story that takes a reader there and gives the reader the moment to think that this is a real thing that happens. This is about the Vietnam era, but this is happening today. I mean, the care is different. The burn care is definitely not the same as it is in the book, but it's still just as painful. You know? I mean, it's still pain. It's still, limbs are still lost. Very bright, intelligent young men now are getting terrible head injuries, which wasn't the same thing that we had in the Vietnam era. But just that close view is really all I tried to do.
Thank you so very much, Madeline. It's been my pleasure to have you here with Living with Literature.
Well, thank you. It's been my pleasure, too.
When Vincent got his orders for basic training in Fort Benning, I took out the map of the United States so I could see exactly how far from Baltimore he'd be. And after he was wounded, I took out the atlas in order to figure out why they flew him from Vietnam to Japan. I could see that it made sense. The evacuation hospital in Japan was the best place to match up the wounded soldiers with the people who had flown out from Texas to pick them up. As for Vietnam, I'd seen the little maps in the newspaper, but it didn't help to study the map of Southeast Asia, because in that case, it wasn't the distance that puzzled me. It was the reason. And yet, I couldn't allow myself to think whether or not the war was a just one. All along, I'd been frightened, as any mother would be, but still I trusted that the president would do the right thing. My country, right or wrong, Mary Kate once flung at me. I didn't know how to explain to her that it really wasn't a case of my country, right or wrong, if all along you believed your country had to be right, so therefore couldn't possibly do wrong. Think, Mom, they've got Vinny now. I tried to think, but I also needed to keep moving, holding steady. I couldn't afford to entertain such a terrifying thought, that my own beloved country, the strong and valiant United States of America, might be careless with its boys. I tried to keep moving, holding steady, but the problem was that when I got to the burn ward, I was forced to sit. There was little I could actually do, little they'd allow me to do. Vincent was a soldier, after all. And so I had only the most basic of tasks to occupy me, getting food and drink to Vincent's mouth, tearing the sugar packets, cutting the meat, buttering the bread. But even those tasks could be taken from me in an instant. The occupational therapist, Lieutenant Darby, was forever patrolling the ward at mealtimes. "Mrs. Duval," he'd say, "if I so much as propped a straw in Vincent's milk carton, let's not do everything for him." I understood that Darby was only doing his job. I understood that the sooner Vincent achieved independence, the better off he'd be. Still, more than any of the others, it was Lieutenant Darby who made me wonder if I should have stayed out of the way, back at home. One morning, down in the canteen, I picked up a magazine someone had left on the ledge and read an article about a pleasure boat that had capsized, throwing a man and his wife into the sea and trapping their little boy inside. It was one of those real-life dramas, with the terrified parents clinging helplessly to the hull until a fishing boat appeared miraculously on the scene. A young fisherman was strong enough to swim underneath, find the child, and pull him to safety. The photographs show the smiling, muscular fisherman with an arm around the adorable child. That story struck a chord with me. The parents, who had figured so prominently in the dramatic beginning, seemed to drift out of view once the rescuing fisherman was on the scene. The shift in focus made perfect sense. After all, what were the parents doing but hanging on helplessly? It wasn't really their story in the end. I wasn't the only parent hanging on helplessly in the burn ward. There were the Mullers from Minnesota, whose son had been burned in a fuel tank explosion at Fort Still. Maria Hernandez from Houston, whose son was just 1 month short of coming home from Vietnam when he was wounded. And Martha Jackson from New York, whose only child was burned so badly he was dying of the pain, which caused a massive bleeding ulcer. I'd stop and chat with these other parents sometimes. They looked unmoored, too. Some stayed a few days. Few stayed as long as I did. There were many who never arrived at all. I could only suppose that they thought it best to do their waiting at home and stay out of the army's way. Or maybe they didn't have the money for the trip. Or maybe they were afraid. Between the hours with Vincent, I walked all over the post. I even walked down to the historic quadrangle and joined the tourists inside the wall of the old fort, where tame deer lay in the shade of the taller trees and a flock of regal peacocks paced on the lawn. I read the information plaques and tried to work up some interest for Geronimo and Chief Natchez, Roosevelt's Rough Riders, General Pershing's campaign against Pancho Villa. But in truth, I'd never been particularly interested in history, and the vacation atmosphere of the old fort got on my nerves. Young parents with small children running around the lawn, everyone snapping pictures, the peacocks screaming and obligingly fanning their tails. The tourists didn't know about the other end of the post, where Vincent was being debrided in the tank. I could forgive them for their careless ease as they strolled about with their children in tow, but all the same, I had to get away from them. Eventually, I established a routine of walking beyond the post gates and through the bordering neighborhoods. I got to know the face of each house along the way, this one with clipped hedges and tidy window boxes, that one with gaudy lawn ornaments and a sagging screen door. Did sadness lie behind the face of one house or the other? On Constance Avenue in Baltimore, the best-kept house on the block, white shears at the two living-room windows, with the shades always drawn halfway, evenly, the pulls hanging like earrings, belonged to a couple whose child had died inexplicably in her crib only a couple of months after Jack was born. Over the years, every time I passed that house, I'd think about the lost child. She'd be 10 years old by now. She'd be a teenager, 17, old enough to go to the junior prom. Sometimes I'd make a loop around a little park. It wasn't much more than a plot of grass dividing a boulevard, some sprawling live oak, some swings, and a rusting jungle gym. There were always two or three mothers at the fringe of the playground. They would look up from jingling a baby carriage or pushing a stroller back and forth. They would smile at me, as though they recognized I was one of their own. When Vincent was little, I'd take him out in a big old stroller I used to call the Cadillac, down Constance Avenue, past the firehouse, because he loved the engines, and sometimes the firemen would come out and make a fuss over him. And never could I have imagined back then that Vincent would be the child who would go off to war and come home to a burn ward.